I definitely think I have made it rather clear that I love the act of storytelling. I think it's one of the unique things that us humans have, and there's a certain art to it that's super admirable. But there are some stories that are better than others. Some stories I watch or read, and I just feel kind of disillusioned. You know, the hero doesn't really relate to me that much. The setup is lacking, and there's a couple missing pieces that just make me not really want to enjoy the story being told. But really what I find is the key determiner of how much I'll enjoy the story isn't the hero or the funny best friend. It isn't even always the way the dialogue is structured or even the strict plot that is followed. No, instead it is one character that things can often come down to, and that is the villain. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Jackie, talk about my opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is movie villains. So, I wanted to first start by kind of going through the types of villains I've observed, some notes on the few forms of media that have expressed these villains, and while I did say movie villains, I'm gonna kind of be keeping it broad, but I feel like movies are the ways in which you get the greatest sense of these villains, because it's a snapshot, and it's not a long series in which you can have those arcs and those character developments. Instead, you kind of need to keep it contained to one singular moment, one movie, and that's what I wanted to focus on. A quick warning, though, is usually when I talk about any form of media, there's likely to be spoilers. That is the same thing in this case. I will likely spoil a movie, so just be warned of that, and I'll mention the name of the movie before I talk about it as well. So, let's get into a few types of villains that I've kind of seen and can categorize. The first you have is the evil mastermind that kind of enacts some kind of revenge or has this backstory weighing them down, right? There's a reason why they're a villain. They're smart and they've dealt with some stuff in life, and as a result, they're evil. I feel like some Disney villains kind of fit into this category where they're like conniving and evil, but they kind of have a reason to be because they went through some stuff. Also, villains like Darth Vader or Voldemort really aren't that great until you know their backstory. Otherwise, they just seem like evil to be evil, and you're like, what's the point of you being a villain? And then you start to learn their backstory, and you realize there's depth to their character. And of course, these are villains that do need longer moments. They can't just have one movie to truly develop, because then you're like, okay, villain with a sad backstory, I've seen that before. Whatever. But when you have a longer movie, or multiple movies, you're able to develop that a little bit more and build sympathy from the audience for the villain. And that can be really powerful in helping drive the plot and the story. I also think it's really interesting is that with these types of villains, you can kind of see their descent into madness. There's these villains where you can see that they're kind of being corrupted over time. So they didn't necessarily start evil, but they had this progression into being a villain. And I find that really interesting. Of course, the next type of villain you have is someone who's evil simply to be evil. Sometimes there's this, it's like the dark force that turns other people evil as well. It's ancient, it's dark, it's evil to be evil. It doesn't really have a reason, it doesn't need a reason, it simply is just bad. I'm not always the biggest fan of this type of evil just because I think it doesn't really resonate with people that well, because of course there are forces that are evil just to be evil out there in the universe, but as human beings, we like to understand why. We like to really be able to consider the bigger picture of what's going on, and that's kind of hard when you have something that's just straight up evil, straight up bad, because you're just told, stay away, you're not really given any reasoning behind it other than, oh, this thing is horrible. I think a trope isn't as fun, but it can be used powerfully depending on the situation, especially if it's like, oh, there's a force that turns people evil. Well, that's another thing we can think about. On the other hand, someone who doesn't believe themselves to be evil, but instead finds justice or righteousness in their actions. Kind of like the anti-hero, but essentially someone who follows their own code and abandons the ones given by the government or a higher order. An example of this you can see is Hannibal from Silence of the Lambs. These are people that the audience almost respects in understanding that they almost think differently, even if that different is wrong. But they carry themselves with this kind of air of respect or elegance that you kind of see and you're like, okay, wow, that's interesting. I respect that. And you see that there's logic in their actions. It's just incorrect logic based on what we consider to be morally correct or follows universal law. Obviously, Hannibal is a cannibal, and that is not okay. But at the same time, the way he carries himself with the poise of a professional makes you conflicted in terms of him as a villain, because you see that he acts badly, but on the screen, he also is able to act in a way that's positive. And so you have these balancing forces of, oh, there's this righteousness in you, but it's also only applied to your specific moral code. And I find these characters to be very interesting because at the end of the day, they blur the line between good and evil. Hannibal's obviously not the best example of this. He is evil. But there are other characters out there that are able to straddle this line a little bit more effectively, and I find that to be super fascinating. Next trope we have is just the crazy. It's the Joker, Commodus and Gladiator, villains that give you fear because you don't see the logic in their actions because there isn't any. You can't follow the emotional connection, the appeal, because they're just volatile. There's no backstory to really empathize with. Their upbringing isn't particularly special. It's just dangerous volatility. And so they can be scary in that way because you realize that anything that can be done could upset this or could trigger this type of villain, could make them act a certain way. The Joker is crazy because you can't predict his next move. And that's what makes him scary. And so there is a bit of scariness to this villain, but they don't always connect the best with the audience because we can't really understand them, right? We're not all going to be Harley Quinns, you know, sitting outside a psychiatrist's office trying to understand the Joker in a deep way. A lot of us instead are just going to be like, wow, they're crazy, that's scary, and move on. So it's really, when it comes down to the villainy and the type of evil you want to portray, half of it is what kind of story you're going to tell, and the other half of it is how do you want to connect to the audience? And I feel like that's a really important piece to think about. We also have another type of villain, which is just inhuman or alien villains. I feel these are not really villains in most stories, as there's usually some kind of human who pulls everyone in a bad situation or acts selfishly within the confines of the story. And a lot of the time, aliens or inhuman villains are just animals trying to do what animals are doing. And while, yes, that does involve harming humans in a grand way, oftentimes it's some kind of governmental force or evil human that is what drives the storyline in terms of who the villain is, and the alien is more of just like a secondary plot point to be like, oh yeah, look at this thing, it's doing bad things, but the way that it's not human, and so there's kind of not that sense of villainy, unless it's something like sci-fi in which there is a consciousness that's associated with it, but that's not always the case. I also want to mention that there is a certain connotation to using aliens as villains or as the enemy, especially based on how they've been depicted. Often it can be more signals of trying to be an allegory for other human beings, and so in that way they can be served as villains. If you want to hear more about this idea of aliens being villains, then I can link my episode to my analysis of the depiction of aliens in the media that I had for a presentation in college. However, I do think it is interesting to consider the fact that there are some cases in which aliens are simply used to show a moral of the story, right? Oftentimes, I've seen this in series where there's aliens who eat humans. And the point the story is trying to make is more the selfishness of humanity, because if when we eat livestock, it's considered fine. But when aliens eat us, it's awful, and yet they consider us livestock. So how does that connect to this idea of this like twisted sense of moral justice that we humans have about our own race? And I thought that was a very interesting concept, an interesting way to twist things, because it paints the idea that humans are really the villain at the end of the day, and that we're unable to step outside of our sense of righteousness and our sense of human superiority in order to see that, okay, maybe we're being contradictory. But at the same time, you could argue that, okay, we are able to achieve a certain amount of consciousness that maybe other animals cannot. And that is the structure that we've set up on, whereas aliens coming in and eating us is clearly a bad thing. No one's going to argue about that. So It's interesting discussions that can be prompted from using inhuman or alien villains, but I also think there can be a lot of danger from it. I did mention this in my other episode podcast, where when we treat aliens as humans, we start saying there's in-groups and out-groups, right? There's some people who matter and there's some people who don't. That's similar when we have aliens who are insect-like or villains that are just massive bugs, because that prompts a certain fear in real life of insects, of animals, of things that are not strictly other human beings. And I think the issue in general with a lot of villainy is that we're generating fear, right? There's a certain type of person that we're generating fear for. And then when we switch it to an inhuman villain, now there's fear generated for that. And that's something I think is really interesting, is no matter what you get, is that there's this human response to seeing something depicted a certain way that usually ends up in fear. And so now, you know, we kill bugs whenever we see them instead of being like, hey, you're helping the environment. Of course, not a direct causation. I can't really link the two together, but I do think it's some of that mindset that's being created. The media has a big way of shaping that, especially with how they portray bad guys, villains, creatures, and so on. But it is interesting. This is a separate point that I really want to highlight. In a lot of the stories, the characters I reference, the villains, almost always have a disability. Like, they're not human, because they're essentially putting on this outer farce. And once you get to know them as villains, you know them in the darkness, all of a sudden they're revealed to be just as ugly, quote-unquote, inside as they are outside. And this has been a trope since we've had stories to tell. I know I see this a lot in James Bond. Every James Bond villain has some kind of disability or deformity. And you don't just see it in James Bond, but in a lot of other stories. Ugliness or disability is what precludes a villain. And I think this is also a very tired idea, because at the end of the day, all it does is try to separate, hey, this is what a particular villain should look like. And so now in society, when we see people with disabilities, we say, oh, I saw a villain with that disability, you must be a bad person too. And that is not at all true. And I think it's a very interesting phenomenon that in order to tell and show the audience that someone is a bad guy, it's like they have to look like a bad guy. You can't look like a normal person. You can't look like the hero. You have to look evil. And the way that's achieved is through disability. I think that is important to mention, because I don't think it's right at all. We so desperately love seeing villains that don't represent us, because it means that, oh, we can't be a villain. Because if a villain's not like me, if a villain doesn't look like me, then I can't be the bad guy. But that's not how it works at all. Is that might make us feel good as normal people like the heroes, but I'd rather think a good villain is someone who makes us question the humanity side of us and makes us think about if we're really so good after all. I like villains who remind me of myself in ways and make me think about myself in ways. And that is not achieved through making every single villain look deformed, because that shows the true nature of their quote-unquote ugliness. Because then you're calling people who have disabilities ugly and unlovable and villainous. And that doesn't sit right either. Because in the act of creating a villain, you are therefore becoming the villain. I don't think this is going to go away in Hollywood. I think the depiction of villains as having disabilities is something that's lasted so long in society that it's not just Hollywood that's a product of it, but it certainly worsens it, and I think can do a lot better job of changing the way these villains are depicted. Because to be honest, I want to look at James Bond, for example, just to talk about some villains that I'm going to explore. If we see Le Chiffre, who's one of the villains in Casino Royale, he is a really good Bond villain, I think. Not because he's scary and cries blood, but because he's very human, right? A lot of the villains in James Bond films and the book series are these evil criminal masterminds, right? They're larger-than-life figures who all have some grand plan going on. And so when Bond stops them, it's like, hooray, he did it. He stopped the big bad guy. And the same could be said of Le Chiffre, but the thing is, he's kind of just a man who's caught in the middle. Everyone else has grand plans to take over the world, and Le Chiffre is just the middleman, a criminal who owes money to powerful people and will do anything to survive. His desperation is what makes him villainous, because he's willing to do anything in order to get himself out of a bad situation. That's what makes him a good villain. It isn't that he looks a particular way. In fact, I think there's a lot to be said about villains who are very attractive and very handsome, because that's off-putting to people. because we expect the opposite. And I think there's a lot of power in having it set up that way instead of just saying everyone who's a villain should have another nipple or something like that. That really does not make any sense whatsoever. But you also see this in Princess Bride, right? With the guy who has six fingers, that is a character trait. It's not just, oh, he has six fingers. It's he is the guy with six fingers. His disability becomes fundamentally part of his character. And that's another aspect that's interesting when we look about villains portrayed with disabilities, is that it's not just that they have it. It's essential to their character, not because it needs to be, but because that's the way they're written. And that's another really fascinating thing that we can look into when we talk about movie villains and the portrayal of villains. I also want to mention two villains that I think are doing a good job of kind of going outside of these categories. And one of them is in Memento. So the main character is the protagonist in the beginning. His perspective is considered holy, right? Because the Memento is all about a guy who has amnesia and can only remember up to 20 seconds of stuff at a time. Of course, he has his memory leading up to this accident that caused this, but afterwards, he has a very fleeting memory, and so he's a very unreliable narrator. And so as the story unravels, you realize that because he's an unreliable narrator, he is really unreliable and ends up actually basically becoming the villain. Unlike other stories that feature the villain as the main character, you don't get the full picture of Leonard Shelby. Because you feel bad for him in some way, sure, but because he has amnesia, you're missing crucial information that when you get it, Teddy, who is kind of set up to be the villain, almost becomes secondary to Shelby's own desires. That reveal is almost like a punch in the gut. I think it's very well done. It's why Memento is one of my favorite movies. Villainy that is obscured and covered can be fascinating because you turn a positive audience attitude into a negative one in the blink of an eye. And yet, you force that audience to wrestle with that transition. Instead of just being, okay, good to bad, now you have to think about, okay, well, what happened? Has the person been bad all along? There's so many questions that you have to answer. This idea is also seen in the movie Clue, where there's a mystery that both everyone and no one can be a villain at the same time. I quite like this rendition of a villain as it casts doubts in the audience's eyes. It makes the audience actually have to do work in wrestling with the idea of villainy, of what's good and what's evil. There's also another movie, Psycho. This is a really classic one. I don't believe this super strongly, but Norman Bates reminds me of one villain trope that's a little quite common, but is also not well represented. It's the villains that are not yet revealed to be villains, but unsettle you. I feel like there's a scene a lot in horror movies. It's when writing and acting perfectly meet in the middle to create an unsettling feeling you can't quite place. At the same time, some can argue that the trauma he experienced also makes him a victim, and he fits into that trope of having a tragic backstory. But in the way that sense of expectation for reveal, the knowledge of villainy but no way to prove it until it occurs, it's always interesting to see it play out on screen. So he starts off as a very unsettling character, and you see him kill someone in his hotel. And then, of course, his delusions with his mom is revealed, and then you realize, okay, she was ultimately one of the villains because she was the one who abused him in such a way to almost make his psyche break. But at the same time, when you're introduced to him early on, you know he's the bad guy. At least the way I watched it, I was like, okay, yeah, he's the murderer. Like, immediately I knew. But you didn't know why you knew. And that's what was interesting, is why did I pinpoint this man as the murderer and not others? That would make it interesting for me as the audience member to really ponder back on. And the last movie I think I'm going to mention is Saw. I'm mentioning a lot of horror, a lot of thriller movies, and I think that's because in order to keep you on your toes, I need to keep the villains interesting. And so I often connect to these types of villains a little bit more than I do with villains in the regular action adventure, because they almost always have some kind of motive, or they're greedy, or have this end goal, and so it's not as interesting of a villain because you almost see it coming, and the rest of the plot is what makes the story more interesting. Or it's not interesting, and it's just your run-of-the-mill action, and that can be fun too. But I digress. In Saw, something that actually reminds me of something that I've discussed with my dad, and that is typically a villain is someone that in the story has to be introduced at some point. You cannot have a random person pop up. That's not good storytelling. Some person who had no seconds of screen time cannot be the villain because no one's going to care about the big reveal you have. But sometimes movies do try to get as far as they can with disguising who the villain might be until the last possible moment. An example of this that's quite clear is Saw. In the first movie, the villain, John Kramer, was in it for one scene before he was revealed to be the mastermind. But at the same time, he was also in the entire movie. They did something incredible in that movie because they made something static become kinetic, so to speak. The dead body that was featured in so many scenes in where the two main characters were trapped was John Kramer the entire time. A dead body became the villain. There was some kind of symbolic sense of revival, and no one expected a dead body to really be alive. And so this was able to turn that idea on its head of, like, you have to have the villain featured, to the villain has been in the movie the whole time. And yet no one knew it was the villain because no one thought that was even in the realm of possibility. And I thought watching that was completely mind-blowing. And of course, the protagonist of Saw 1 later ends up becoming a villain following that corruption arc that I mentioned earlier. That's totally possible. But if we think about the total picture of villainy, I think the best villains are ones that catch us off guard. And those are often the ones, not that are evil to be evil, but that have something to hide. Some way of interacting with the audience and relating to the audience in some fascinating way. And I think that's what makes a really good villain in all media, is someone who makes you think and someone who makes you think about yourself in a greater sense. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Jackie On. I'll catch you in the next one.